Kiwi spoke up right away.
"You took xenobiology," she said. "Were you paying any attention? Our pigs don't have muscles either, but they can also move. Those machines back on Gamma Pavonis moved very quickly, too."
"Yeah, but these things are freaking trees. It's not the same." He had a point, and I didn't have an answer. Natasha came to my rescue.
"I've been running tests on the samples I took," she said. "We don't know everything yet, but as far as I can tell, they have something like nanotubes inside their tough exterior. You saw that material that looked like corn silk, right? That stuff contracts when stimulated. Each strand works like a thin muscle. Each of the thousands of string-like hairs are attached to two spots inside the tube-like outer structure. Working together, they cause the creatures to move."
"You're talking about nanotubes inside the trunk, right?" Carlos asked.
"The trunk and the limbs, they're the same. Those arms that look like branches to us are really tubes of flexible cellulose. Think about them as tough rubber hoses filled with strands of nanofiber. It's a marvelous system, whether it was designed or it evolved naturally."
Her last comment sparked my interest. "You still think these things might be bioengineered?"
"It's possible," she said. "We just don't know enough yet."
"Well," I said, sighting along my rifle barrel, "I think we're about to get schooled." There was a distant movement, a shivering of the tallest ferns to the south. I focused on that region as it was directly ahead and part of our designated firing zone.
"They're creeping up on us," Carlos said suddenly.
There was a certainty in his voice that got my attention. "Do you see something, specialist?" He never got the chance to answer. At that moment, Natasha reported in, updating my tactical screen. The techs had sent out a skirmish line of buzzers into the deep forest to watch for trouble. She relayed the live feed to her commanders, including me. Sure enough, the tree things were advancing toward us on all fours. They lit up on my helmet's tactical display with red arrows pointing down to their tracked positions. I did a quick count. There were about 20 contacts coming toward our unit's portion of the defensive line. There had to be more than 100 circling the entire camp. "Hold your fire until they break into the open," I said. "We want to hit them hard and all at once. If they come in a little closer, they won't be able to turn around and run."
"I don't like this,"
Kiwi said, breathing hard over her microphone.
"They're intelligent. The one that we killed didn't seem too smart, but this behavior, these things are coordinating. I don't think they're simple animals."
"Agreed," Natasha said. "They're clearly intelligent beyond the animal level. As to the behavior of the first one, remember, it was a newborn. How smart were you 30 seconds after birth?"
They both had made good points, and I didn't like any of them. I hoped the enemy would be as dumb as the trees they resembled. The mere fact that creatures made of cellulose were creeping up on us as an organized group was, well, creepy. How did they communicate? Who was leading them? I gave my head a little shake to get back into the game. The here and now was all that mattered. There wasn't time to have a scientific debate about the enemy. All we could do was wait for their charge. They didn't take long to begin the attack. Almost as one, they rose up above the ferns they'd been hiding behind. I heard a ripping roar of gunfire as hundreds of soldiers opened up all around us. We were blazing away like there was no tomorrow, and with only one lifter and one revival machine, we might be right. Thousands of tracing rounds leapt through the air from the squads around us. My reticle lit up, indicating I was on target, and my team joined in. The monsters were lumbering toward us. They were a little slow at first because they had to stand up from a hunched position and get their big legs moving. The 10-meter-tall ferns of the forest came to the curved knees of the tree creatures. I hadn't really noticed before, but now that Natasha had explained they were boneless shells full of thousands of strand-like muscles, I could see they didn't have joints. Their knees flexed in a curve rather than bending sharply in the middle. The effect was strange to witness, but it was also undeniably effective. They came at us at an alarming pace, tearing the ferns apart and brushing them aside. A combined warbling howl began as the charge became widespread. All of the creatures seemed to be letting loose at once. The sound could only be described as a battle cry. Just one of these things could give you a headache, but 100 of them? I wasn't sure my eardrums would survive it. Men put their hands to their helmets and shouted in pain, but the monsters were making so much racket that our own screams couldn't be heard. Our rate of fire slackened until it almost died out. Fortunately, the aliens didn't keep the howling up for long. They were moving faster now, orange, fleshy fronds bouncing like leaves all over their strange bodies. Giant ferns whipped at those lanky, striding legs. I even saw several of them leap, soaring over gigantic roots. Our small arms fire wasn't doing much. We fired into their mass but weren't bringing anybody down. "Sargon, burn the closest one! Squad, all follow his target! Everyone hit the one that he lights up! Hit it hard!" At first, the automatic fire slowed. Then, when Sargon nailed the leader, we all lashed it with a storm of bullets, knocking it from its feet. It went down hard, thrashing and rolling. The next two monsters behind went down as well, tripped by the fallen leader. "Focus on those three. Mark your targets. Follow my lead." I engaged a tactical option in my helmet's battle system I'd never had cause to use before in infantry gear. The option made the arrow over the head of my target blink rapidly. That got my whole squad to target the same alien. We hadn't fought too many monsters that were so big we needed to use the system, but we needed it now. I'd used it before to coordinate fire on the biggest machines on Machine World, but I'd been driving a dragon then, and I wished I was driving a dragon right now. I'd have felt a lot safer. We'd only brought down 6 by the time they hit our line. My whole unit, facing 20 of the enemy, was overrun. Graves came on the channel, giving us all direct orders in the final seconds before they hit us. "Duck down when they step over you," he said in a remarkably calm voice. "Lie down in the trench. That way you'll probably avoid being crushed. When they stop the charge, do battle by squads with the nearest enemy. Fire at will." The battle went into slow motion for me after that. It was like I was living at a different pace. My heart was pounding, and my lungs were burning with rapid, panting breaths. I fell on my back when the enemy hit our front trench line. A wave of dirt splattered my faceplate, obscuring my vision, but I was able to see the foot that had landed not 5 feet from me. Someone in the line hadn't been so lucky. It was Natasha. A giant had stepped right on her, crushing her down with terrific force. I let rip with my rifle, shooting the alien right in the crotch, but that only lasted for a split second before it was gone. A few drops of milky fluid dripped from the creature onto my armor, smoking white as the acid burned the metal. Scrambling on all fours to Natasha, I was able to haul her out of the dirt. She was buried and helpless inside a huge footprint, but she was still alive. The earth and her armor had kept her from being crushed to death, but she had been pinned down. After freeing her, I turned back to the enemy. They ended their charge as I watched. We were in the first trench, not the second one, but this time we'd actually gotten the better end of the deal. The monsters that had overrun us stumbled to a halt. Some of them actually bumped into the hull of the lifter as a man might push off on a wall after a hard run. They doubled back and began going to work on the humans inside the inner circle of trenches. Methodically, the aliens dug soldiers out of their shallow, scraped holes. All at once, I knew how gophers in a field must have felt when their homes were being stomped out of existence by a pack of grinning farm boys. Fortunately, these gophers had teeth that could reach up to bite an enemy at range. I lit up a new target, the one I'd shot in the groin. Everyone who was able to fight blazed at it until it fell, thrashing. A flopping infantryman was in its hands, looking like a toy. Even though we took it down with concentrated close-range fire, it had time to crush the man's helmet with its massive jaws. The headless body was then cast away, twirling end over end until it crashed down onto the upper hull of the lifter and lay there motionless. "Unit," Graves said, still sounding like he was officiating at some kind of picnic. "I've been informed that the lifter crew is about to employ anti-personnel weaponry. Take cover, now." For a moment, my mind froze over. Then I remembered what he was talking about. Our lifters had new equipment, anti-personnel turrets. Essentially, these weapon systems were pulse lasers on rotating mounts. The weapons had been added after our troubles on Machine World. I'd been briefed on them, but I'd never seen them in action. Looking over the scene, I thought it might be disastrous to employ such a tool now. We had every soldier left alive in the Legion out here defending the line. The automated turrets didn't always know friend from foe, as I recalled. If they had a target, they fired, regardless of who might be behind that target, or even in between the target and the turret. "Take cover!" I shouted to my squad, throwing myself into the trench again. Others tried to follow me, but it wasn't easy for all of us to fit. The soft dirt of our trenches had been greatly disrupted. Much of the trench line had been filled in by the tread of multi-ton monsters as they charged over us. Gazing out of my thin line of cover, I realized why the lifter people were panicking. The creatures were all over the ship, tearing at it. Metal chunks had already been ripped from the hull. In their combined fury and strength, they'd managed to shift the entire lifter, and now it stood at a cant of perhaps 5 or 10 degrees. All around the perimeter of the transport, more and more aliens were rushing up, joining their frenzied comrades. They were about to tip the ship up and over. The turrets rolled out of protective clamshells. Visually, the effect was like that of a large animal opening eyes that had been tightly clamped shut. There were 5 or 6 turrets within my field of view, too many for my comfort. When the turrets began to fire, things got worse. As far as I could tell, they were killing men as often as aliens. For every monster that was lit up and blown apart, at least one of our troops died in the flashing spillover. Scrambling on all fours, I crawled up against the body of an alien and took refuge there. As I moved, I felt something catch my foot. I pulled hard and quickly broke free. Dragging myself, sides heaving, I fell back against the trunk of the dying alien. It was still shivering with those fronds it had on its trunk twitching and squirming like dying snakes, but it provided shelter for me with its body. Two of my troopers joined me in short order. One was Carlos, the other was Kivi. "You hurt, boss?" Carlos asked. "I'm fine," I said. "Keep down, we'll be okay." Carlos gave Kivi a worried glance. We were all staying low up against the fallen trunk of the alien. Carlos backed down the length of my body toward my boots. He kept the body of the fallen monster against his shoulder as he moved.
"Just lie still, McGill," he said.
I felt something then. It was a hard tug on my foot. "What the hell are you doing?" I demanded.
"I'm doing my job, Vet. Kivi, get his attention."
Kivi's face came into view. I was lying on my back now, and my breathing was ragged. I felt a little funny.
"James," Kivi said, forcing a smile, "you're going to be okay. You took a hit, that's all. Just lie here and let Carlos do what he's been trained to do."
I knew it was good advice the second I heard it, but as my mama could have told you, I wasn't much for following good advice. Heaving myself into a sitting position, I grunted and strained. I pushed Kivi away and stared down at my legs. One of them was missing, just below the knee.
"Damn," I said. "Those friggin' turrets, that was Winslade. I bet you $1 to a donut. He ordered them to let loose with the turrets." "I've almost got this," Carlos said. "But you've lost a lot of blood, Vet. You need to lie flat. Sitting up is sending more blood right out of your body."
"What good am I with one leg missing anyway?" I demanded. I tried to get up, and they both worked to stop me. If I'm one thing, I'm a large, strong man. I bowled Kivi backward and pushed Carlos's face out of mine. Lifting my rifle, I unloaded it into the nearest creature. The monster went down with a crash, but it wasn't just my doing. It was one of the last ones standing. Lots of people were firing at it. It felt good to see it fall anyway. In each of its alien claws, it clutched an armored corpse as if it didn't want to let them go. I looked around the battlefield, sweating and panting. I grinned.
"Looks like we wiped them out," I said. "Maybe Winslade made the right call after all."
Carlos came back to my side and gently tried to push me down. I felt myself sinking. I didn't remember him being that strong. I kept on sinking after I was lying on my back, spinning, too. I wanted to vomit, but I couldn't get anything to come up. Carlos and Kiwi were saying something, but I didn't catch their words. Then, looking up at plants so tall that hazy clouds drifted between my eyes and their glorious crowns, I died. Chapter 21. While I was dead, a thought occurred to me. No, it didn't really happen that way, but it felt as if it did. Sometimes when a man is revived, it seems like his mind has been dreaming while floating in a hazy half-existence between life and death. This was just one of those times. The thought that was fixed in my mind as I breathed with fresh lungs, coughing and hacking, was that I'd been wronged. I shouldn't have had my leg blown off. It was the fault of my officers, and I wasn't happy about that. My mouth worked the moment I came back, but my limbs were sluggish. I squinted as I opened my eyes. All I could see was bright white lights and shadows moving nearby. I knew they were bio people. For some reason, they seemed like ghouls to me today, and I wanted nothing to do with them.
"You can all go to hell," I said in a raspy voice.
"What's that?"
asked a voice. I recognized it was Anne after a moment, but I didn't care. I was in a bad mood this time around.
I said, "You're all assholes, and Winslade's the worst of your kind."
"You're not making any sense, James," she said patiently. "I can barely understand your slurred words."
Sitting up with a grunt and a deep breath, I found an orderly was poking at my neck with something.
"What's his APGAR score?"
Anne asked. 9, I'd say. He's a good grow by all the numbers, but his mind seems fuzzy."
"Give him a minute."
The orderly poked at me again. His face was too close to mine. He was looking into my ear for some shitty reason. I found him and his instruments to be intolerable. I put my hand on his face and pushed. The man went over and back onto his ass with a satisfying crash. Another face appeared in my limited field of view after that. It was Anne, and she looked pissed. Her arms were crossed under her small breasts, pushing them up a little.
"That's not an appropriate attitude, veteran," she said.
I looked at her. More specifically, I looked at her breasts. They were plumped up by her arms, and I focused on them blearily. "You got nice ones," I said. "They look perfectly round, like apples." She made an odd sound of disgust then.
"Are you making a pass at me, James? The moment you come back, are you serious?"
"Suppose I am."
"Well, that has to be the worst pickup line I've ever heard."
Despite myself, a smile flickered over my face. "I'm a little off my game," I mumbled.
"You sure are. Now, is there a reason why you're abusing my staff?"
I looked at the orderly. He was standing well clear of me, looking wary and irritated. "Hey, guy," I said, "you look like you're gonna cry. Why don't you go pout somewhere else?" Anne moved between me and the orderly as I began to climb off the table. Maybe she took my move as threatening.
"James," she said, "you're exhibiting aggressive behavior without cause. That's not good. Try to get a grip on yourself right now."
I finally grasped what she was saying. She had the right and duty to recycle me if my brain wasn't working correctly. If I'd come back physically crippled, I'd have been killed for that as well. "I'm fine," I said.
"Sometimes," Anne said, eyeing me in concern, "a bad grow doesn't have a twisted limb or an organ failure that's easy to measure with a blood test. Sometimes they come back with a twist in the mind. I'm hoping that's not your story, James."
"It's not. I'm fine."
"Can you tell me why you're angry?"
she asked, gently. The truth was that her questioning was pissing me off, but that wouldn't have been a good thing to admit. Instead, I tried to remember why I'd come off the table so sure that I'd been mistreated. The thoughts I'd awakened with were hard to grasp. They were already like dreams that faded the second you woke up. Often, a minute or two after rebirth, I couldn't recall what I'd been thinking about as I woke up. But then I finally remembered. "I've got it now," I said. "The turrets. The officers screwed up."
"What do you mean, James?"
"They put the troops out in the forest instead of using our new defenses. They should have kept us back under the hull of the lifter. They should have deployed the turrets before the giants even showed up. If they'd done that, only a few of us would have died. Maybe none of us would have. That's why I'm pissed off. Hundreds died for nothing." Anne looked at me thoughtfully. After a moment, she nodded.
"You have a point. We lost about half the force we had out there. I'm no tactician, but I can see why you aren't happy."
I sucked in another breath and I felt better. I took a second glance at the orderly.
"Sorry,"
I said.
"No problem,"
he responded, but I could see in his eyes that it was a problem. I ignored him and moved to the lockers. I pulled on a uniform and left the revival chamber. As I did so, I could hear the orderly talking to Anne quietly.
"Are you sure he's okay?"
the man asked.
"It's my call and I've made it."
"Yeah, sure.
Your call?"
Feeling another mild surge of anger toward the nosy, whining orderly, I left the chamber before I could act on it. Was something wrong with me? What part of the brain controlled anger? I had no idea. Could it be true they'd brought me back to life with new emotional problems that I didn't already have? Wonderful. Usually when troops were revived outside of battle, they headed for their bunks or maybe got a light meal. I did neither. I almost didn't know where I was headed until I got there. The guards at the ladder that led up to the officer's deck let me pass after a cursory glance. After all, I'd blown past them with Winslade's blessing just a few hours earlier. They had no idea what I was intending to do. Winslade was in his office, but he wasn't alone. The Primus had a guest. Claver was strapped to a chair in front of Winslade's desk. I barged in and stared. Claver's head was lolling strangely.
"What the—"
Winslade demanded.
"Oh, it's you, McGill. I thought he was still dead." "Well, no matter. Did they send you to collect the body? That's what I requested. I thought you were an orderly. Such an inconvenience having them all so busy down there."
I was still staring at Claver. His head rested on his chest. His tongue protruded, and his eyes were open a fraction.
"You killed him?"
I asked. Winslade laughed.
"Slow today, are we? Claver chose not to give me the information I wanted. I decided to re-roll, as it were. Next time we'll get more from him. I've learned a few things from this experience."
There was blood on the floor. Claver's blood. My eyes crawled over it silently. Now don't get me wrong, Claver has always been a card-carrying fucker of the First Order. I'd once watched him cause thousands of Tau to die just because they inconvenienced him. But that didn't mean the man should be tortured to death. What made it worse was knowing I'd suggested we revive him for questioning. This same cruel cycle of life, torture and death, had been visited upon my person in the past, and I took a dim view of the practice. "If there really is a hell, and there's any justice in this universe," I said, "someday Claver will be the devil's favorite." Winslade cocked his head and narrowed his eyes.
"You're in an odd, poetic mood today."
"But that doesn't mean," I continued as if he hadn't spoken, "that we should torture and kill even such a wretch as he." I looked up, meeting Winslade's gaze. He knew then what I intended. He saw the emotions surging behind my eyes. A murderous lust burned in my twisted mind, an anger I couldn't hide any longer.
"What's wrong with you, McGill?"
he asked.
"Has something gone wrong with your revive?"
"I don't think so, sir," I said. "I think it's gone very right. I think I can see more clearly now than ever before." Winslade nodded and sat on his desk nonchalantly, as if he didn't have a care in the world. I didn't have a weapon, but we both knew that didn't matter.
"Your head is tilting to one side, and your left eye is blinking on its own," Winslade said. "Are you even aware of that?"
"What I'm aware of is your shortcomings as an officer," I said. "You ordered us to set up a defensive position too far out from the lifter. We should have been tightly circled under the vehicle's struts. Then anti-personnel turrets would have been deployed safely with us in reserve instead of the other way around." Winslade shrugged.
"Tactical hindsight? Really? That's what this is all about? You think you know better than I do how to run a cohort?"
"Yes," I said flatly. He frowned at me.
"I shall have you arrested for this," he said. "But I want to hear more first. Let's hear what you really think."
"I think you're a sadist who sat up here toying with Claver instead of doing your job," I began, and it got worse from there. I told him everything I thought, hell, everything the whole Legion thought about Primus Winslade. He shot me before I even finished my tirade. I never saw it coming. Whatever else he was a sneaky bastard. He'd had a small concealed needler in his palm the whole time. I figured that out later. When I was on my back trying to breathe and staring up at him, he dared to loom close.
"You want to know what I think?" he asked me conversationally. "I think you're a big baby who didn't like dying in a fight. Worse, you're a bad grow, a mental case. That's lucky for you, because I'm going to give you another chance, just like Claver here. Now, when you wake up, I want you to come upstairs again and give me the best apology you're capable of. One that money can't buy. Do you understand?"
Growling and spitting blood, I reached for his throat. I caught hold of his neck for a moment, squeezing, but I lost my grip. I was gratified to see the shock on his face as my big fingers tore at his shirt and pulled him off balance. Then the needler sang again, and my nerves wouldn't obey me any longer. I gargled and twitched for a time before dying. I was happy to see Winslade panting and leaning up against a far wall, waiting at a safe distance for me to die. There were marks on his neck, red welts that would turn purple by tomorrow. I died with a feral grin on my face. Chapter 22. When I slid out of the revival machine's maw for the second time in a single day, Anne had her hands on her hips instead of crossed under her breasts. Her expression was a mixture of wariness and irritation.
"Well, James, are we crazy again today?"
"Nope," I said, feeling it was true. "Not any more than usual, that is." She shook her head and sighed.
"You really got me in trouble, you know that. I'm up on report for letting you out of this chamber. The only thing that's saving my stripes is the fact you failed to finish off Winslade."
"Pity," I said, sitting up and rubbing my face. She looked at me sharply, and I grinned back at her.
"Just kidding," I said. "If a man's got to die, what better way is there to go out than trying to kill Winslade?"
"What is your problem exactly?" she demanded.
I explained about Claver being tortured and revived again, and how the same thing had happened to me once. It was something I had trouble contemplating, even now. She nodded slowly.
"You were traumatized in a past life, so you took it out on Winslade. You know, your story does make better sense than his did. Winslade claimed Claver went for his gun and he had to kill him."
"Did you see the body?" I asked.
"No,"
she admitted. "Two deaths in Winslade's office in one day? What are the odds?" She looked troubled.
"If he's torturing prisoners to death, well, that goes against hegemony regulations.
He could be in trouble for that. Claver is a citizen, after all, and some of the people back at Central actually like him.
Yes, they probably do, but Turov and Winslade don't.
Anne nodded.
Okay, so you had your reason for going nuts. But I'm asking you again for confirmation. You feel less angry now, right?
Yes, I admitted. There was a white heat in my mind before. I couldn't control it.
Probably a duplication error in the prefrontal cortex, she said. That's the part of the mind that manages our responses to surprises and other stimuli. You couldn't second-guess your reactions. You just gave into them. That kind of error in a grow is hard to detect.
I can see why, I said. What now? Am I under arrest or something?
As I understand it, Winslade is waiting for you in his office.
Frowning, I pulled on a uniform. Do you know what he's waiting for?
Do you remember what he said when you died? He told me about it.
I strained to remember. Things were coming back to me slowly. Oh, I said as I remembered. An apology. He said he wanted an apology.
Right. A sincere one.
Heaving an angry sigh, I thought it over. It wasn't the worst possible fate. Maybe I should just go do it now and get it over with. But somehow I didn't want to.
Anne? I asked. She'd already moved on, tending to her strange machine.
What?
She asked without looking over her shoulder.
Come take a break with me, will you? A short one?
You are still crazy, aren't you? Do you know how many people are still on my revival list? We've only got one machine.
So make another bio and hand off the task. How long has it been since you had some downtime? You can't revive the entire Legion without taking a break.
Anne stretched and groaned. She looked at the dusty roster displayed on her tapper. I glanced over her shoulder. As I'd figured, she'd already been at it for 2 solid shifts. In the end, she followed me out. The orderlies shook their heads and gawked after us in bemusement. I tried not to notice. Over a cup of coffee, she stared at me meaningfully.
You're just trying to delay your fate, aren't you?
She asked.
You mean about apologizing to Winslade? I was hoping for more than that.
What are you talking about?
You have the power. The power to set things right, Anne.
She stopped munching on her pastry and put her coffee in front of her mouth to hide her lips. Some of the cameras and drones could read lips, I knew, and I guessed she was trying to prevent that.
What are you talking about?
She whispered.
Are you going to go ape again?
Probably not, but just hear me out before you call security.
Her eyes slid around the place and finally landed back on me.
All right, talk.
Winslade is screwing up, right? I asked her.
I don't know. Well, okay, I guess he is. But we're still alive.
For now. But those aliens will come again. Maybe there will be 10 times as many next time.
What are you talking about?
I explained to her what Natasha and Kivi had said about the pods being biological defense systems for the megaflora, that a single plant had generated around 15 of them in response to our presence. She looked shocked and worried when I finished explaining these things.
Here we are, I said, leaning across the table toward her, sitting in the Legion's last lifter, waiting around to see what the aliens will do next. What's our goal? What's Winslade's plan? How will he get us out of this?
I don't know. He must have a plan. He's in command.
His plan is to torture Claver for information on the enemy. He may or may not get anything useful. In the meantime, we're close to being wiped as a Legion. This lifter is all that's left. Minotaur is dead.
It's a grim situation,
she admitted.
But it's not our job to fix it.
I nodded in agreement.
I know. But I also know the stakes are high. Sometimes you have to take action, even if it's not fully sanctioned.
What can we do about it?
Would you rather have a different person in command right now?
She looked at me thoughtfully.
I guess. Sure. Winslade's not the best.
Right. Here's my point. You and I, right here, right now, have the power to decide who's in command.
Anne's eyes widened.
Where do you get these ideas, James? And why am I listening to this?
I smiled tiredly.
It's a curse. I don't like doing things off script. Really, I don't. But when you see a disaster coming at you, isn't it your duty to at least try to stop it, even if it's someone else's job?
Anne sipped her coffee, and then she licked her lips.
Who? Who are you suggesting we revive? Do you really think Turov would be better?
Actually, she might be, but there's another officer in the chain of command that should be alive right now. Only Winslade's bullshit is keeping him dead.
Tribune Drusus?
Right.
She leaned back and sipped her coffee. She didn't seem to want to look at me. Her hands shook slightly as she looked into her mug.
All right, I'll do it, she said at last. Damn you, James. I'm such a sucker.
If you are, it's only because you can see the truth. You know I'm right. Drusus or Turov should be running this show. That's regulations. Winslade is playing God by keeping them dead.
I know.
In the past, Anne had been party to a few off-script revivals. She'd brought me back to life after I'd been sentenced to be permed, for example. Partly because of that, I knew she could be swayed to use her power over life and death if it was for a good cause. After Anne was on board, the rest was easy. We walked back to the revival chamber and dialed in the changes to the queue. There was a scare about 15 minutes later as we were delivering Tribune Drusus, however. Specialist? An orderly asked Anne. Primus Winslade wants to talk to you. Have you got your tapper on silent? Anne looked at me. She looked guilty and a little scared.
Sorry. I'll take the call.
She stepped away while I toweled Drusus off and gave him a uniform. The orderly looked back and forth at Anne and me, clearly wondering what the hell I was doing in the chamber and what we were up to. But so far he hadn't asked directly.
Winslade's coming down here, Anne said. He wants a fresh Claver.
A third one?
She nodded grimly. Tribune Drusus sat up, bleary-eyed.
What's this about Claver?
He asked us. I turned toward him and smiled. Good to see you back among the living, sir.
Brief me on our status, veteran, Drusus ordered. Very quickly.
Gladly, sir. As I talked, Drusus dressed and left the revival chamber. He walked with me toward the upper decks of the lifter. His face grew darker by the second as he listened. I gave him a fast rundown. He'd been dead for over 2 days. Winslade was in overall command of the expedition by default. We'd suffered alien attacks and lost half our remaining troops. Conveniently, I left out everything about Winslade and me fighting in his office, but I did mention we'd revived Claver to question him about the fate of the freighter.
I felt I had to act, sir, I finished.
Specialist Grant shouldn't be blamed for disobeying orders. I convinced her that regulations were not being followed regarding the designated order of revivals.
Meaning, you didn't like having Winslade in charge of the last few members of this legion.
I nodded. Drusus said. I'll have to reconsider your actions when I've got the current emergency under control. In the meantime, thanks for getting me out of purgatory.
You're welcome, Tribune.
Winslade met up with us before we reached his office. He was coming the other way, probably wondering what the holdup was down in the revival chamber. When he saw Drusus, Winslade's eyes flashed wide, showing the whites for a brief moment. Then he had control of himself again. I don't think there were two people he would have been less happy to run into right then. His left hand clasped his right, making a single popping clap of happiness. A false smile flickered over his mouth.
Sir, Tribune Drusus, I'm so glad to see you up and about. I'm so glad that we've finally gotten past the combat troops and into the upper brass revivals. Great news, that.
Drusus gave him a flat stare in return.
Let's take a little walk, shall we?
I stopped following them then. Winslade took a moment to glance back at me. His eyes were full of venom,
but I didn't care. He hadn't gotten an apology out of me, and as far as I was concerned, he never would.
Chapter 23. The third version of Claver lasted longer than the first two. I suppose that was due to the fact Tribune Drusus had taken over the interrogation. Drusus invited me to the festivities. I was there because I'd heard Claver's story the first time and Drusus wanted a fact-checker. Winslade, due to his excesses, wasn't allowed in the room at all.
"Let's go over this carefully," Drusus said. "You know of these creatures. You call them the Were. You've dealt with them, and you know their points of origin."
"Not exactly," Claver said. "I know they plagued the squids. That's how I first found out about them. They're like a cancer in the cephalopod kingdom. Forgotten worlds, wilderness planets, they start right in the midst of your territory like a deadly fungus, quietly growing in a city park. They expand insidiously, covering an entire world with their vegetation."
"So are you saying this forest we're in is all part of an alien biomass?"
"Yes, exactly. The small mobile creatures they spawn, they're only a defense mechanism like the white blood cells in our bodies, the gigantic plants themselves, the things you might erroneously call trees. Those are our alien opponents."
It was hard to fathom. I was used to thinking of plants as mindless and fairly harmless. The idea I was sitting even now at the foot of an evil, thinking being, one that couldn't move but which could grow things that moved for it, the concept was alarming, to say the least.
"I'm still unclear as to the nature of your interaction with these aliens," Drusus said. "How did you come to make a deal with them? Why did they chase and attack you?"
"Hold on a minute, boss," Claver said, chuckling. "I didn't make any deals. I just happened to know a few things about them from the squids, that's all."
Drusus shook his head and glanced toward me. "I'm beginning to understand why Winslade lost his patience with this man." Claver's eyes narrowed.
"Is that a threat, sir? Are you planning to torture and kill me just like your Primus? Come to think of it, he might have been acting under your orders. Maybe this whole rescue routine is part of your grand plan, cooked up to trick me into giving you information I don't have. Well, sir, let me warn you, Central is going to hear all of this eventually. Central will hear me out."
Tribune Drusus seemed unmoved.
"Yes," he said, "I am threatening you. Cooperate, or you'll wish you had."
Claver kicked up his foot and stuck out his bare toes, spreading them wide.
"Stop blowing them off, then," he said, "just like Winslay did. At your orders, fiends, the lot of you Varus people."
Drusus smiled. "That approach didn't work for Winslade, and for the record, he operated without my consent. But his results were still instructive. I've got a different fate in store for you if you should refuse to cooperate."
"Refuse to?"
Claver sputtered, then he cranked his neck around and looked at me.
"Are you listening to this? I'm counting on you as a witness when Equestria Nagata takes down the full report. Abuse, distrust, accusations without grounding. McGill, you'll back me up in court, won't you?"
I stared at him for a moment, thinking. When I had my thoughts lined up, I answered. "I didn't like the way Winslade treated you. In fact, I tried to kill him for it." Claver brightened and gave me a fierce grin.
"You went for Winslade? I love it. Boy, I owe you one for that."
Drusus looked uncomfortable, but I pretended not to notice. I didn't like Winslade, and I'd reacted while in a less controlled state of mind. All that didn't mean I was in love with Claver, however. "Don't get any big ideas," I told the prisoner. "I'm not going to save you from every legionnaire that wants a pound of your flesh. You should know that my parents were in the crowd when your ship smashed down into Earth. They were permed out there at the spaceport."
Claver licked his lips.
"I'm sorry," he mumbled. but that wasn't my fault.
Drusus cleared his throat. Do I have your attention, Claver?
Good.
Here's what will happen if I'm unhappy with your responses from here on out.
This ought to be good,
Claver interrupted, sneering. Hegemony made an agreement with you, Drusus said, which allows you to share in the trading rights for resources mined on Gamma Pavonis. It's stipulated in that agreement that criminal actions void the contract. I will move to declare your contract null and void, and I'll strip you of your transportation and trading rights, which under—
Whoa, Claver said, eyes bulging. That's just plain mean. What's more, it's counterproductive and illegal. I'll fight you every step of the way. You don't have the authority to—
No. You forget, sir. I'm in command of this expedition. This task force has been granted punitive powers. I could easily execute you permanently, but there might well be another Claver out there somewhere still operating. No, the best way to gain your cooperation is to attack your source of wealth. Are you listening now?
Yes, Tribune, Claver said, glowering defiantly. All right, then. Let's hear that story again. This time, make me believe it.
I had to hand it to Tribune Drusus. He knew this scoundrel well. Claver would rather die than give up incriminating information, but when faced with the loss of his most lucrative contract, he'd buckled.
First, I want assurances, Claver said. I want your word my contracts will continue at your recommendation if you find my story credible, no matter how happy or unhappy the truth makes you.
Drusus considered for a moment.
Agreed, he said at last.
Okay, then. Good, Claver said.
His voice shifted suddenly, and I was under the impression he was speaking plainly and truthfully, perhaps for the first time.
Here's the deal, he began. I traded with these plant people. They're weird, but they understand payment and the delivery of goods. I found out about them from the squids, just as I said. I thought to myself at the time that I shouldn't be a bigot, just because they're plants. These fellows might turn out to be good customers. After all, they operate like rebels inside the cephalopod kingdom. So I contacted them and offered them titanium.
So far, I believed his story. Claver always had a nose for deals. He'd trade with anyone or anything.
You see, they need metals, he continued. Most of the planets they inhabit are like this one, low-metal worlds. Most species don't like low-metal worlds as they don't make good colonial homesteads. But these plants, they don't need metals, except that is for one thing.
Starships, Drusus said.
Exactly, starships. They need metal to build them, to escape a world they've overgrown, and move on to the next. No one can reach escape velocity from a world with cellulose, acids, and organic gases alone. They need more powerful chemical reactions, things that can only be contained in the best of metals.
Trading with such beings, that's a treasonous offense all by itself, Drusus pointed out.
Hold on, hold on. Remember, they weren't inside the boundaries of Frontier 921. They were in the Squid Kingdom. They were beyond the frontier outside the Empire. So, I made some perfectly legal deals. I ran metals to their secret worlds, the ones the squids had yet to stomp out. It's been giving the squids fits, by the way. In a manner of speaking, I'm a misunderstood hero, sir. And that's the God's honest truth.
Drusus seemed amused. Could you explain your thinking on that point?
Well, I've been supplying our worst enemy's enemy with critical supplies. Why do you think they haven't flown to Earth and wiped us out yet? Fear of the Empire? Hardly. They have problems of their own. Their ships are busy. I've been helping to keep them busy.
Everything you're saying makes a strange kind of sense, Drusus admitted. But I fail to see why these beings chased you to Earth and tried to destroy you if you were their benefactor.
Yeah, that part. Well, like I said, I was doing business with them inside Squid territory, but then they wanted to make me a secret delivery inside the borders of Frontier 921. At first, I thought they wanted to meet me out here where Squid patrol boats wouldn't pick us up. Imagine my shock when I saw they'd colonized a world right here, in the midst of Imperial space.
Drusus nodded. So you refused to do the deal?
Essentially, Claver said, eyeing both of us. He shrugged. I turned my ship around, went into warp, and pulled out. They chased me to Earth, you know the rest.
The whole scenario was clear in my mind now. Claver had been scared to find a colonized world near Earth. He'd run out on his trading partners. Enraged, probably because they'd already made payment, the Wurr had chased him to Earth and destroyed his freighter. Drusus's hand fell on Claver's shoulder. Claver flinched in response, but Drusus didn't strike him.
Claver, he said, I'm going to accept this version of events. I'm sure you've edited the story heavily in your favor, but a deal gone bad, I can buy that story. I can also buy that you deal with an alien menace so dangerous it's seriously damaging an interstellar neighbor of ours.
Why, thank you kindly, sir,
Claver began.
But, Drusus continued, I want you to understand that your actions still border on treason. None of these dealings have been sanctioned by Earth or the Galactics. You are operating outside the law. You are aiding and abetting a threat to this entire region of space. These beings will never be content with a few forgotten worlds among the stars, will they? They have clear ambitions to take this region of space for themselves.
Claver shifted uncomfortably, and Drusus removed his hand from the man's shoulder.
That said, Drusus went on, a deal is a deal. You're free to go.
A deal is a deal.
Claver agreed happily.
I'd prefer to be dropped off on Machine World, where I have associates waiting if it's not too much trouble.
You misunderstand me, Drusus said, his eyes dark and unblinking. You're free to exit this lifter, to walk among your megaflora friends.
What? You're kicking me off this ship? They may not be very understanding, Tribune, sir.
Drusus nodded. That's possible. But that's not my fault now, is it? In the future, should we meet again, I would suggest you keep local Earth officials apprised of discoveries of this magnitude. Are we clear?
Claver sputtered and complained, but in the end he was kicked off the lifter and out into the forest. We gave him supplies, a vac suit, and a snap rifle. In my opinion, that was more than he deserved. I watched as Claver wandered off into the forest, casting dark glances over his shoulder toward the curious troops who watched him leave.
Banishment, Drusus said to me.
An ancient, traditional punishment. If anyone might survive such a fate, it's a man like Claver.
I think it was a good call, sir, I said.
Drusus looked at me appraisingly.
I'm glad you feel that way. I've studied your case as well, McGill. While I know that Legion Varus has a tradition of accepting off-script behavior from their troops, we can't allow anarchy to prevail. Your actions regarding Winslade and disobeying orders, they're too great to be ignored.
My heart sank. I felt certain I was about to learn my fate today as well.
I understand, sir, I said, standing tall. Whatever he was going to say, I'd accept it. I had a level of respect for Drusus that was greater than any officer in the Legion, with the possible exception of Centurion Graves.
Good, he said. Here's your mission, or punishment, if you prefer to think of it that way. You'll gather your squad. Together, you'll follow Claver discreetly. Use buzzers to track him in the forest. Find out where he's going and what he's up to. There are so many things we don't understand about this planet and Claver's interactions,
such as how he talks to giant trees in the first place. Your job, from now on, is to learn those details.
My mouth hung open. But what about the whir, sir?
You'll deal with them. You have my utter confidence. Report in daily and try to stay out of sight.
Right. Sir, when do we return?
Drusus gave me a thoughtful glance. I'll review your reports. Possibly I'll make the decision that your reconnaissance team is worthy of a rescue effort. In the meantime, I'm taking this lifter out of this region. It stands to reason the Wurr pod walkers will attack this camp again, and I don't want to be here when they do. I nodded, numbly. Then I had a thought.
But, sir, why punish my whole squad? They didn't do anything wrong.
That's another lesson. As a commander of troops, you must always be thinking of the people who are following you. They will pay for every mistake you make. It's called responsibility. You might want to look that one up on your tapper.
I'll do that, Tribune.
Good luck, McGill, he said. Then Tribune Drusus turned around and mounted the ramp into the dark hold of the lifter. I watched him go, feeling like a man who'd been exiled, because that's exactly what had happened. Chapter 24. In distant Roman times, banishment had been a common form of punishment for society's rejects. Sometimes it was suffered by a family member who no one could stand, or an entire household cast out of their homes by their fellow villagers. Nations sometimes rejected whole tribes, exiling them and commanding them to leave for the wilds. It was a fate that had been suffered by many in history. I stood at the edge of the encampment. My grim-faced band of soldiers was arrayed behind me. The officers were watching from behind the safety of the lifter's blast glass. Winslade had called our mission a deep patrol for the benefit of the squad. But I knew the score. We were being sent on a suicide mission. Even if we did make it back, there wouldn't be anyone here because the lifter was leaving without us. We stepped over the still, smoking bodies of the Wurr. I entered the forest with no illusions. This was Death World. At the rear of our procession was a revving drone, a pig loaded with everything we'd need for several weeks. That fact had my team in a bad mood. They weren't dumb. They could count, and a large amount of supplies meant a lot of marching around in these deadly woods.
What the hell is this all about?
Carlos demanded when we left the main camp behind. He craned his neck this way and that, peering into the undergrowth for other squads.
Deep patrol? I don't see anyone else marching off to their deaths in these ferns. What makes us so special?
Haven't you heard? Keevy asked. McGill went ape and shot Winslade. The bio people in the revival room are all whispering about it.
I glanced at the two of them in irritation.
I didn't shoot anybody.
Then why did you take two trips through the revival machine today, vet?
Keevy demanded.
Bad luck, I guess.
Refusing to explain any further, I led them deeper into the quiet forest. This planet was probably the quietest place I'd ever visited. Normally there was wildlife, peeping and howling in a landscape like this, but we heard very few sounds of that nature. No insects buzzed, no animals screeched or growled. The forest was dead, in a way. Only a profusion of gigantic plants, an alien species that had invaded the planet fairly recently, showed we were on a living world at all. My squad grumbled and engaged in wild speculations. I figured it was a good diversion for them. They didn't know that we'd been sent off to die out here while the lifter took off for greener pastures. I was a little worried about a breakdown in discipline when they figured out that part.
Vet,
Keevy asked after a half hour had passed.
Yes, specialist.
I recommend that we remove our helmets, or at least open our faceplates.
Why's that?
You hear that hiss in your suit? That's the air conditioning, and it's wasting power. If we want to be able to fight a prolonged engagement, we should reduce consumption. The oxygen levels in this atmosphere are nearly double that of Earth. There won't be any problem with breathing.
I looked at her for a moment. Kivi was my tech specialist. I would have traded both her and Carlos